Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center estimates that if the fiscal cliff negotiations fail completely, the average American will end up paying about $3,500 more in taxes in 2013. Now, as we just heard, you'll feel some of that towards the end of next month. And sorry about the reference to the fact that it will make you feel sick. And as we just heard, it's expected that Congress will jump in as people are, you know, well, feeling sick about the new taxes. But meanwhile, regardless of the fiscal cliff, there are other new taxes set to go into effect on January 1st to help fund President Obama's health care plan. So what are they? David K. Johnston is the tax guy. He won a Pulitzer for his reporting on taxes. He's a distinguished visiting professor at Syracuse University College of Law, and we always love it when he visits here. David, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on, Robin.
And let's talk about these taxes to pay for health care reform, already enacted. They're law. They're kicking in. Most people won't feel them. It's the top 2% of earners who will see these higher paycheck deductions from Medicare. Let's start there. Tell us what everyone pays currently in automatic deductions from your paycheck to fund Medicare and what the increase will be and for whom.
Well, Medicare, like Social Security, is half taken out of your paycheck and then half wages you don't see, often described as an employer contribution, but it's really wages you earn. So 1.45% of all your compensation for work, whether it is a business you run yourself, if you're a sole proprietor, you're a partner in a law firm and it's your salary from the firm, or it's your wages. If, however, you're a married couple with more than $250,000 of adjusted gross income, that's the last line on the front page of your tax return, or $200,000 if you're single, so we're talking about the top 2%, there'll be on the income above $250,000 an added 0.9%. So it'll be, instead of 1.45 coming out of your check, on that portion of your income, it'll be 2.35% of your income.
I'm going to try some more math here. That means couples with a combined income of, let's say, $300,000, which would be $50,000 above that $250,000 threshold you mentioned, that extra $50,000 above would be taxed an additional 0.9%. We figure that's about an extra $450 for the employees. And employers who have to match the Medicare payments below those thresholds don't have to match that extra that's going to come starting next week?
I believe that's correct. If I'm reading the, the statute, that's correct.
Okay.
It's on the one side.
Okay.
But even if it's on the other, we're talking about actually a very small amount of money. Understand that, for example, people who have a salary of over $200,000, that's only 1% of all workers.
Right. So they
a
will,
tiny number of workers.
Right, and but they will be paying a little bit more into them. You know that they will be hitting them. But and the same small group of workers is going to be paying more on investment income. Now, this is going indirectly to fund some Medicare payments. Let's talk about that in a minute. But this is a big increase because of the health reform law. What's the increase on investment income?
Well, it's not workers. It's investment
income. I'm sorry,
income.
Yes. Yeah.
On investment income above $250,000, not total income, just the investment income above $250,000, it's 3.8 percentage points. But let me give you an idea of how small that is. I've gotten out the government's latest spreadsheet is for the year 2009, and it appears to me that among people making $1 million to $10 million income from all sources, that the average increase in tax for this will be about $13,000. That's 0.6% of their income. Now, why is it the tax rate goes up 3.8% but only 0.6% of their income? Because only a minority of the income comes from investments, and then the first $250,000 is excluded.
Okay. So, and by the way, speaking of excluded, if you're talking about capital gains as well, I mean, investment income.
Capital gains, dividends,
yeah.
Rents,
right.
Royalties.
Right. Well, and for instance, in home sales, individuals already don't have to pay any tax on up to $250,000 from a home sale. Married couples can shield $500,000 in a home sale. So, again, you're talking about things on top of other things. And it's so funny. I just want to mention to you, David, we're reading in the Boston Globe, this is why many investors were selling their assets earlier this year to avoid a higher tax. No one mentioned the health reform tax. People assigned that to the increases proposed by, in the fiscal cliff debate. But if we go over that cliff and automatic tax increases kick in, will taxes increase on investment income in addition to the 3.8% that's going to be an increase because of the health care reform?
Yes, but let me just make sure, make this clear. Now, the
sure.
number of people affected by the 3.8% figure is around 100,000 to 200,000 out of 142 million taxpayers. It's a tiny group of people.
Okay.
Now, if there is no deal made, and I think that looks increasingly likely, then the current tax system will change for capital income as follows. If you get long-term capital gains, instead of paying a 15% rate, you'll pay a 20% rate at the top. If you have dividends, we now have two kinds of dividends, ordinary dividends and qualified dividends, and they're roughly half and half. Those dividends will now be taxed at ordinary rates. So if your tax rate was 39.6%, instead of paying 15 as the lowest rate possible, you'll pay 39.6%.
Okay. Another complication, by the way, is that employers won't be able to deduct all of these new taxes from wages. Again, we're talking about the taxes that come from health care reform and are set to kick in next week. So, for instance, if you qualify for the new deductions because of combined incomes, not just your income with that employer, your employer can't deduct that, which means, again, it's a few people, relatively, but it sounds like some people are going to be surprised at the end of the year when they owe more because you can't deduct those combined income increases from a paycheck.
Well, yes, I don't think anybody affected by this will be surprised. If you're making the kind of money where you're affected by this, if you either aren't yourself an expert or don't have professional advice, your numbers are probably in the hundreds or dozens.
Okay.
So you know about this. Your accountant or tax preparer has talked to you about it. I think you'll see some changes in behavior because of among people at the very top.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a narrow group of generally very well-advised people who, remember, have gotten the lion's share of the tax benefits. 12.5% of the Bush tax cuts went to the top 0.1% of Americans.
Okay.
And the top 0.1% of Americans have roughly the same income as the bottom 50% of Americans.
That's David K. Johnston, the tax guy, as we call him, a distinguished visiting professor at Syracuse University. We're going over some of the taxes that are set to kick in next week because of health care reform, having nothing to do with the fiscal debate. But when we come back, what are some of the taxes that are going to kick in as we go over that cliff, as everyone today seems to think we're going to do? And I hear that David K. Johnston thinks this is not necessarily a bad thing. We will ask him about that in about 1 minute here and now. Welcome back. We're talking about taxes as we end 2012 and look ahead to next week when some taxes are set to kick in. These are not fiscal cliff debate taxes just yet, but these are the ones that we've been talking about. These are the ones that are already scheduled to pay for health care reform. We mentioned slightly higher taxes for higher income people. Also, medical device makers are going to face a new 2.3% tax on products sold chiefly through doctors and hospitals. This includes things like pacemakers, artificial hips, flexible spending accounts. People set aside money tax-free to pay for medical expenses. In 2013, those accounts will be capped at $2,500. But David K. Johnston, who's been our guide here, who, of course, has written about taxes and financial issues for the New York Times and Reuters, and is now at Syracuse University. David, these are the things that are set to happen. What about the unknown? We just want to ask about, what is the biggest tax break of them all, allowing employers to contribute to health plans tax-free. This is a bigger revenue loser for the government, we understand, more than mortgages and charitable deductions, according to the Boston Globe. So what's your sense that is going to be, that loophole is going to be closed?
Well, I don't think that that's probably called a loophole. I mean, it is a tax decision openly made by Congress and debated now for many years. It may be unwise policy, but I wouldn't call it a loophole.
Okay.
I think what this is bringing into focus is that America's non-system sick care policy does not work. And let me just give you a rather stunning number. Compared to the 34 modern countries that belong to the OECD, the other 33 countries compared to the U.S., per capita, in what are called purchasing parity power dollars. That's real dollars to compare one to the other. For every dollar per capita the other 33 countries spend on universal health care, we spend $2.64. Mm-hmm. They spend an average of $3,100. We spend an average of $8,200. All we have to do is fix health care, and all these federal budget problems go away. And in 2010, this excess cost above the average of the other 33 countries, that equaled all the income taxes everyone in America paid. That's how this terrible, inefficient system, which is far from the best in the world, we're rated 37th by the World Health Organization, we rank behind Cuba by one measure and a lot of other small countries by others in the quality of our health care. We're paying tremendously high prices. We still have 50 million people with no coverage. We have about 45,000 people a year die unnecessarily for lack of health coverage. That's the number one thing affecting our budget. It's not the tax break. It's the way we finance health care.
Okay, and we've had those conversations as well. But as we continue to look at taxes today, I want to move from the taxes that are set to kick in next week and speculation about whether or not that deduction for employer-based health care might be stripped away to the parallel debate over tax increases and closing true loopholes in the fiscal cliff debate. As we said, the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center estimates that the average American will pay about $3,500 more in taxes next year if there's no deal. And we just heard from our first guest that you'll start seeing some of these increases next month, which is probably going to make Congress jump in and try to fix things. What am I hearing, though, David K. Johnston, that you are in the choir that says the fiscal, you know, going over the fiscal cliff is not such a bad idea?
No. First of all, I don't think it's a fiscal cliff. I think it's a fiscal curb.
Right.
And if you're worried about the deficit, this is a good thing. We will be reducing federal spending significantly and we'll be increasing government revenue. And if you think, and I'm not among that crowd, that the deficit is the most horrible thing we're facing, then you should be cheering this development. What I believe we're going to see happen is some kind of changes will come after the first of the year. But it's very clear now that Speaker Boehner is not really in charge in the House, that he's unable to reach a deal. And I believe the next 2 years we're going to see some of the strangest political experience in American history, because there is a segment of House Republicans who will not make any compromise on anything. It is ideology uber alles to them. And they sincerely believe what they're doing and apparently believe that anything that stands in the way of getting what they want must not be compromised with.
Well, and that is that means that cuts will be gone and taxes will increase, even though they are dead set against tax increases. So let's go through some of the cuts. Payroll tax holiday. This was part of a tax deal in December 2010. It cut payroll taxes on all employees by 2%, from 6.2% down to 4.2%. And the White House has been pushing for an extension. This was always supposed to be stopgap.
That was a temporary measure, just like the Bush tax cuts. And here's the problem with that measure. For people like my wife and I, who both pay the maximum, we got a savings of $4,200 from this, whereas the average American worker makes the median wage in this country is $26,000. You saved $500. This is another example of upside-down deals where people with higher incomes do better than people with lower incomes. It also, basically, I think, is not a sound way to finance Social Security, but we're likely to see some sort of deal because after the first of the year, Republicans can vote for something and call it a tax cut.
Right. In other words, if taxes go up because these automatic cuts, because automatically these cuts from the past are done away with and taxes go up, they can vote to then lower taxes.
That's exactly right.
Okay, you mentioned...
And they can do so, by the way, retroactively. Remember, in 2006, the Republicans sponsored a bill to retroactively raise taxes on teenagers, despite their Norquistian pledges to the contrary. And there are many cases in history of Congress retroactively raising or cutting taxes.
Okay. You mentioned the Bush tax cuts. What do you think will happen there? I mean, again, they're set to expire December 31st. And Democrats want to extend them for the middle class while letting them expire for the top 2% of earners. So what do you think is going to happen there?
Well, this is really only about the top 2%. President Obama has made it clear, and all House Republicans agree that taxes should not go up on people making less than $250,000. So all we're talking about is whether the marginal increase on incomes above that level will go up. Mm-hmm. The White House has indicated it may be willing to go for a 2 percentage point increase, although it has spoken in favor of the Clinton-era level, which would be a 4.6 percentage point increase
that high income. We'll have to see how that unfolds. It sounds the same like the same conversation we had last time. David K. Johnston, thanks so much. We'll post the name of your new book at hereandnow.org. Thanks, as always, David. Back in a minute, Here and Now.